Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining me for a Community Geek member spotlight. I'm here with Janet Swisher of Mozilla. Say hi.
Hello.
Janet has been a very active member of the community. She's written resources for us, including a fantastic case study. I think that was the first, like, really heavy lifting member contribution of my tenure here. Like, it's like multiple pages of a Word document, and it's fantastic. For those who weren't following, it was about the Mozilla CEO and a recent controversy about that. Janet gave a really interesting perspective on how the community was managing that. Go check it out in the library. But right now, we're going to focus on Janet herself.
Okay.
What first drew you to online communities?
Well, I guess I've been in part of online communities for a really long time without kind of realizing that that was a special thing. I'm dating myself a little bit here, but I was on Usenet back in the late 80s, early 90s. And there were some of the news groups there that I hung out in and really became a part of at that time. And then various mailing lists and things over the years. I became involved in open source about 10 years ago, because I was working for a company that released some of its source code as open source, and they had an open source community around that. And as a staff member, I was basically, nobody had the job of community manager, but I was one of the few people that was thinking about how do we make sure that everything we do is open and accessible to the community and encourage volunteer contributions and so on. As a result of that and some other activities, I ended up being hired by Mozilla initially as a technical writer, but they told me at the time, well, we expect that you'll be spending about half of your time actually doing writing and half of your time working with community. And then the community part of it just grew and grew, and so I switched from the title of technical writer to the title of community manager.
That's interesting. They had you, because I checked out your LinkedIn, of course, and your list is technical writer. It's interesting that they knew up front that that would be really demanding on the community side of things as well.
Yeah, so the area of Mozilla that I'm involved in is developer outreach, including developer-oriented documentation. So we have a wiki of developer documentation, and that's what I was initially contributing to as a writer and then encouraging the community of as well. And it being Mozilla, it's a nonprofit open source project. There are lots of areas for volunteer involvement, so they knew that, you know, community contribution to the wiki was going to be something that I would be involved in.
Has your community role expanded as you've stayed with the company?
Yes. So when I switched to being a full-time community manager, my scope increased as well beyond just that developer documentation site to include other areas of what we call developer relations. And that includes technical evangelism, where people go out and talk about web technologies and how developers can use it and so on. And that's something where, again, we have very enthusiastic volunteers who want to help with that and go and give talks at their, you know, their local JavaScript meetup group or something like that. And so that's another community that I am helping to manage.
What are the typical challenges you run into in the evangelist role? Like, if you could tell me a really good story about you running into an issue, and it's not a job interview, but it does make for compelling listening.
Of course, and like a job interview, my mind is going blank. But I guess one of the challenges that we run into is ensuring that people have current and up-to-date technical information to share. One of my colleagues was telling me just this morning that he saw a talk that some volunteers gave, and they were making reference to some outdated technology, and he was going, but we gave them the new information. Why didn't they use it? So that can be a challenge, is not only putting the information out there, but making sure that people take it up and use it.
Why didn't anyone read the sticky?
Yeah. Well, and of course, coming from a documentation background, you know, the tech writer's lament is that nobody reads the documentation. So it's a familiar situation for me.
So speaking of your tech writership, and I got to ask, any identification with Tina, the technical writer?
I'm
sure you get that
much
all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun to have a representation of your profession in the popular imagination. But
there's no community manager in Dilbert, as far as I know.
Yeah, that's he hasn't quite updated to that. I kind of think of it as the tech writers tend to be kind of Rodney Dangerfield saying, you know, I don't get no respect. And my feeling is that respect has to be earned. And so tech writers who don't get respect, it's because they haven't earned it. And they're acting a little bit too much like Tina instead of being like, you know, partners with the engineers that they work with.
So. I think Janet has just called out the entire technical writing community right here in the podcast.
No, it's only some of them, and if you're not that, you know it. So, unfortunately, the people who do fit that description probably won't recognize themselves.
Well, if they were, they probably wouldn't fit that said description.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So,
You also run a pretty cool blog, the Techie Tech Writer blog.
Yeah, it's that kind of saddening. Neglected. I haven't updated it in quite some time. It's one of those things that, well, especially since I've changed into a new role, I kind of feel like I should revamp my blog, make it much more about community management, change the platform that I'm using, and it's this huge long list of stuff that I never actually do, so it just kind of sits in language.
Speaking of platform, what are you using? Because it looks very distinctive.
For my blog or for the,
it's not a WordPress as far as
it's not WordPress. That's the thing, is I want to switch it to WordPress and
I've been,
again, my mind is going blank. It's not a super popular one, but somebody recommended it, you know, 5 or 6 years ago back when I started.
Well, in that case, you might find WordPress a lot easier to deal with, but
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of the blog, when I looked there, it said you've got an interest in Aikido, and I have to ask you about it because I used to do Aikido. I took years of it. It was great. So what's your interest in Aikido? How advanced are you?
So I've been doing it for about 19 years, and so I'm Nidan rank, which is second degree black belt. I'm planning to test for my third degree black belt in December, assuming everything works out. So I've been doing it a long time, and I find that it's good for stress relief. And I just, the philosophy of Aikido really appeals to me. It's a martial art where the goal is to resolve the conflict rather than to defeat another person. So if somebody presents you with a conflict, you find a way to redirect what's going on, so that nobody gets hurt. And, so that's, an attitude that you can bring into a lot of situations, whether they involve physical conflict or not.
Absolutely.
And that really appeals to me.
Yeah, that's the one thing that stuck with me. I don't remember much of the moves or anything else, but the philosophy at the dojo that I trained at, the sensei was, I mean, we spent a lot of time talking about it and focusing on it. Even when we were doing the physical exercises, he would often talk through just sort of the attitude, the approach underlying everything, and that's what really stuck with me, and it's fantastic. I wish a lot more martial arts took that approach.
Yeah, and Another aspect of it, I guess, that appeals to me is that especially the style of Aikido that I practice really focuses on mind-body coordination, because you really have no hope of trying to influence what happens with another person unless you have centeredness in your own body before you start to interact with them. And again, that's something that can really help you out in a lot of ways. And if you can find your center and keep it, you can deal with things a lot more effectively.
And how many years has it taken you to get to this black belt level?
Well, I got to the level that I'm at after about, 12 or 13 years. And then I just haven't thought about, advancing again for quite some time. And when I say I've been doing it for X number of years, that doesn't mean I've been doing it consistently that whole time. But that it's been that long since I started. And the key to advancing is you just keep showing up. And if you haven't shown up for a while, that's okay. Just keep, go back again.
Mm-hmm.
That's
terrific.
And, people ask, how long does it take to get a black belt? And that's one of those questions, like, how long is a piece of string? It all depends.
Right. Do you ever do it competitively?
No. That's another thing, is that in most styles of Aikido, there isn't competition because of this whole, not trying to defeat the other person thing.
Mm-hmm.
There is, in my style, there is actually a form of competition where it's more like pairs figure skating. So you have two people that are competing together. They do a series of techniques that's, a set defined thing. And then they are judged on a scale and other pairs are judged on a scale. And it's who performs the best in terms of their, connectedness, energy, extension, actually getting the form right, and all of that kind of stuff. But I haven't ever tried to participate in those competitions.
All right. So this is going to be another general question that might make your mind blank, but hopefully stick with me here on this one. I ask everybody, don't worry about it.
Sure.
Tell me about your proudest achievement and the story behind that success.
Actually, one of the things that I've done in my professional career that I'm most proud of was a volunteer activity where I played a fairly small role. But I in addition to Mozilla and the other open source company that I mentioned before, I'm involved with a project called Floss Manuals, which is about writing free documentation for free software. And that project uses a methodology called book sprints, where basically if you want to write a book on a topic, you get a certain, some set of experts together in a room for like 5 days and you write a book. And there was
That's fast.
Yes, it's pretty revolutionary. And there was a project that Floss Manuals did to write a book called How to Bypass Internet Censorship. And I'm not an expert in that topic. My role on that project was as an editor, just to make sure that, the grammar was consistent and the voice was pretty much consistent across the whole project, the whole book. But that book has been translated into a number of languages. There was funding to translate it into Persian, for example, and Arabic. And that book was used by activists during the Arab Spring to figure out how to get around the government censorship that they were seeing. And so, my role on that, what I feel was relatively small. I was just editing other people's work. But I feel just so proud that I was involved in something that helped people, express themselves and create change in their world. And so that, that's something that just gives me goosebumps to know that I was involved in that.
That is incredible. And that's I'm a big security privacy guy, and I was following the various technology aspects of the Arab Spring with, you know, the governments, especially Tunisia, because I had actually written a paper in grad school about the government control of their single hard line to, like, the larger internet. And at the time, I think the question was about whether it should impact international aid for developing telecommunications. Like, should that be a condition divesting the government from that company? So I was already, like, plugged into that whole thing, and that's just incredible that everyone's translating and using your book to help get around that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and another kind of fallout from that, from the nonviolent revolution that they had in Tunisia, is that Mozilla now has a very active local community in Tunisia, because people kind of realized, oh, free software is important for, like, freedom. And so, you know, that has gathered a bunch of people together to help with this free and open source browser. And it's really, you know, inspiring that that they've, you know, they've made that connection, and they've just gone to town in terms of getting involved with Mozilla.
No, that's absolutely fantastic. I've been to Tunisia. Tunisian people, great. Absolutely great people.
I'm going to get the opportunity to go there this fall, because Mozilla is having a big community building event in Tunisia, partly because it's kind of centrally located for Europe, Middle East, and Africa, because there's a community there to help organize things. So
that's convenient.
Yeah.
Terrific. Do you want to plug that event now, like the city and time?
Well, it's going to be at the end of September, and it's primarily for people who are already involved with Mozilla to try to train them up and give them more skills for attracting new volunteers to Mozilla. So not something to plug to the general public, but certainly if you're listening to this and you are involved with Mozilla, keep your eyes open for that email.
I just found out our listenership was quite a bit larger than I expected, so you may get a few people off that.
Okay, cool.
What book are you reading right now?
Let's see. Lately, I've been mostly reading magazines, but most recently I read The Mongoliad, which is... it's both a series of novels and a bunch of kind of spin-off novellas and so on. And it's collaboratively written by Neal Stephenson is kind of the biggest name involved in it, and several other fiction writers. And it's, you know, it's this series of novels and so on set in the Middle Ages, about the time of the Mongol invasion, and following various characters through that whole saga. So that's a lot of fun. And their kind of business model is very well suited to Amazon Kindle. So, you know, if somebody comes out with another novella set in this world, you know, I can buy it for a few bucks, and and I'm, you know, get another fix of this whole series.
Yeah, that's pretty clever.
Yeah.
I never heard of it. I'll have to check it out. I like the historical fiction type stuff. That's good stuff. In terms of profession, your more professional interests, what area of research on community science do you have your eye on right now?
I guess I'm interested in research around what gets people engaged and keeps them engaged. What I deal with in Mozilla is not the same kind of online community as I think many people connected to Community Geek may be involved in. As in, it's not just a discussion forum. It's a community of action around this project that communicates through a number of different channels. We have mailing lists, we have chat channels, we seem to come up with new ways to, you know, new channels all the time. And I think people can get a little spread thin across all of that. So, but what I want to find out about is, you know, what are the things that keep people coming back, essentially, and motivate them to continue to be involved. So.
All right. Awesome. I think it's great that you have a different community, because you really bring a cool perspective. I think out of all the communities that we have, communities of action, communities that are get around to either accomplishing something or making something, are probably a little more underrepresented than they should be. We have lots of communities of practice. We have lots of communities of interest. We have some education-based communities, but they're not quite building something or trying to get a change. I don't think we have any political communities of action now that it crosses my mind. I think we could use more of them.
Yeah, that would be also an interesting perspective. Actually, back when I was still more of a tech writer, but I was already working for Mozilla, I would go to technical writing conferences and find that the people there that I had the most in common with were the tech writers who worked for the Church of Latter-day Saints. Because they also had enthusiastic volunteers who wanted to help them and were looking to find ways to open up their work and make it more accessible to their volunteer community. And it just, you know, again, that's a type of community that I haven't noticed as much being represented on Community Geek would be religious communities. So
yeah, that's good.
That was interesting to me.
Well, if you are listening to this and you manage a religious online community, by all means, we could definitely use your perspective over here. And finally, just how can Community Geek members follow you? If they want to get involved with Mozilla and work on the projects that you're working on, where do they go?
Well, if you want to follow me, my Twitter is JM Swisher. So follow me on Twitter. And if you want to get involved in Mozilla, go to the main website, which is www.mozilla.org, and look for the Get Involved link. And there's a web form there where you can look at the different areas where people can contribute, pick the one that sounds interesting to you, fill out that web form, and somebody will get in touch with you about ways that you can get involved.
All right, terrific. Well, thank you, Janet. Thanks for taking the time to talk to me.
My pleasure.
Yeah, it was great. And thank you guys for tuning in to another Community Spotlight. We're doing one of these every month for active members in the community that are contributing unique content or just posting on tons of threads. Either way, I'm good. And it always is a very interesting discussion, just like this one was. So I hope you tune in for the next one. I hope you guys have a great month. Bye.